Hi, I'm Pastor Rick. Welcome to Building a Better Marriage. Building a Better Marriage is dedicated to helping us as men learn how we can become more effective as husbands, as fathers, and as men in general. Today, I am going to be indebted to David Flowers for some of the insights that I learned from him that I will also be sharing with you as we look together at how we can make our marriages what we want them to be. Now, we're starting with three premises here. First of all, God wants marriages to be healthy. God did not intend for any marriage to be a pain in the neck, didn't intend for any marriage to be sick. God intended for all marriages to be healthy. Number two, a good marriage takes two, but all you can do is focus on you. Let me say that again. A good marriage takes two, but all you can do is focus on you. That's why we never marry another person with the idea, once I get married, I'm going to change this other person. None of us can change anybody. A good marriage takes two, but all you can do is focus on you. And number three, your marriage is God's will for you now. You know, it's amazing how many people, after they've gotten married, will come around and say, I think I married the wrong person. My friends, your marriage is God's will for you now. Now, today I want to talk to you about how marriages fail for a number of reasons. And I want us to start looking at some of the reasons. Some of them you may have heard already. Some of them you may have given yourself. Okay, if I were to ask some of you, what were some of the reasons that causes marriage to fail? Well, very quickly, people will say, at the number one top of the list, it's money. Or they may say, no, it's sex. Or they may say, no, it's stress. They may say, no, it's friendships outside the marriage. Some would say jealousy. Some would say children. Some would say communication. Some would say issues with in-laws. Well, I want to give you some news today. For some of you, this is going to be good news, but I expect that for many of you, this is going to be bad news. Did you know that none of these factors in and of themselves lead to divorce? You say, what are you talking about? Did you know that healthy couples routinely argue about these same issues and even more? And do you know that some of the best marriages are marriages where there is actually a very high degree of both passion and conflict? Did you know that in other very good marriages, partners seem to almost avoid certain hot button issues altogether, and they get along quite okay through their avoidance? Now, this will come as good news, even as a relief, I suspect, for those who thought that the frequency of fighting or disagreeing and conflict is directly related to separation and divorce. It's not. All couples are going to argue. All couples are going to have disagreements. This is not something that's unique to you and to your spouse. But there's another sense in which this is mixed news. If none of these issues is responsible for routinely breaking up marriages, that would seem to complicate the picture for some of us, wouldn't it? We might say, well, if it's not money, if it's not sex, if it's not my in-laws, if it's not any of that stuff, then how do I know if my marriage is in danger? Now, marriages don't break up for an infinite number of reasons. Money, sex, parenting, communication, some or all of that stuff may be at an issue in a marriage that failed. But some or all of that stuff is also is an issue in most marriages that succeed. That stuff in itself is not what breaks up marriages. Marriages break up for a pretty small number of reasons. In fact, precisely four reasons, according to John Gottman, who is a great expert on marriage and relationships, and he's written a book on why marriages fail. Now, there are other authors who have also written books on why it is that marriages fail or why it is marriages don't work out the way we had intended for them to work out. John Gray says relationships break up because men are from Mars and women are from Venus. Now, John Gottman reminds us that even in the best, most healthy marriages, there are often drastic differences between partners. Yet the relationship still thrives in spite of how often they come from different planets. John Gray implies that in order for relationships to be healthy, women must learn Martian and men must learn Venusian so that we can hear each other. Now, John Gottman goes deeper and he gives us what he calls the four horsemen of the apocalypse, the factors that will usually lead to divorce if not detected and brought under control. Now, Gary Chapman, of whom I am a tremendous fan, Gary Chapman tells us we need to speak one another's love language so that we are communicating love in a way that the other person understands as love. Now, John Gottman tells us that there are things that will keep us from being able to communicate love no matter how hard we try. But I still advocate to you to read the five love languages. But realize this, knowing those five love languages themselves are not going to be the sole key to marital bliss. William Harley wrote another good book, His Needs and Her Needs. And he emphasizes there of being sure to meet one another's needs as a way to affair-proof your marriage. Now, another author with his Prepare and Enrich material, David Olson, looks at the degree of agreement or disagreement between couples in areas where they consistently tend to fight. Now, all of these things are good, and all of these methods are great, and it's good to know all of this stuff. After all, why shouldn't you learn to respect the differences in your relationships? Why shouldn't you learn to speak in your partner's love language? Why shouldn't you make sure not to overdraw your love bank account? And why shouldn't you try to ascertain and meet your partner's needs? We do need these things, but we need just a little bit more if we are going to get the kind of joy and happiness in our marriage that God intended for us to have. Now, I'm not saying, by mentioning those other authors first, I'm not saying dismiss what they have to say, because those theorists have contributed greatly to our understanding of marriage. I'm just going to give you a little something else to add on today. I want us to look even deeper than things that we might read into what the scriptures themselves have to say, because a lot of our success in marriage is going to deal with our own hearts. Now, let's see what Jesus says here in Matthew chapter 12, verses 33 through 35 says. He says, make a tree good and its fruit will be good, or make a tree bad and its fruit will be bad. For a tree is recognized by its fruit. You brood of vipers, how can you who are evil say anything good? For out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. The good man brings good things out of the good stored up in him, and the evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in him. Now, Jesus is saying, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth will speak. In other words, who you are will come out of you one way or another. You cannot ultimately hide the real you. And neither can I ultimately hide the real me from my partner. Marriage exposes who we are like nothing else that we run into. I want you to realize that Jesus knew what it was he was talking about. Now, John Gottman has studied couples longer and more closely than any other researcher on marriage, and his conclusions are pretty astonishing. It turns out that it's not your opinion on sex that is going to ultimately doom your marriage. It's not how you deal with money. It's not your views about child rearing or daycare or your in-laws. Those issues, as important as they seem, are all things that can be worked out between couples as long as the relationship is free of Gottman's four horsemen of the apocalypse. These four things are signs that a marriage is on its way to an almost certain failure. Now, I'm simplifying what Gottman said a bit, so if you want to, you may want to get his book. Now, you want to know who these four horsemen are that will destroy all of our marriages? Well, the first one is criticism. The second one is contempt. The third one is defensiveness. The fourth one is stonewalling. You see, healthy relationships are not those where there is no yelling or where the traditional issues that plague marriage are not a factor. Healthy relationships are those that somehow involve much smaller amounts of criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling than the relationships that do not make it. Dr. Gottman has become so good at identifying these things that just by listening to a couple speak to each other for 15 minutes, he can predict with 94% accuracy whether or not that couple will divorce within 10 years. Do you understand that, my friends? Just listening to 15 minutes of how you interact with your spouse can determine whether or not you are still going to be married for 15 years. Is your language with your spouse loaded down with criticism? Is there a lot of contempt there? Is there a lot of stonewalling there in the relationship? Is there a lot of defensiveness where this other person never can say anything without you? You're just about to getting upset? Now, it's interesting. It takes 15 minutes to do that, because if you par that 15 minutes down to just 5 minutes, his accuracy rate plummets to a mere 80%. This gets to the heart of what Jesus was saying about what's in the heart is eventually going to come out. You see, we may be able to control that thing for 5 minutes, but give us 15 minutes to an hour, and who we are and how we treat our spouse really begins to show. Now, marriages fail for a small number of reasons. It's not as confusing and as complex as you may have thought. Criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. These are the reasons that marriages fail. Now, let me define these for you, and then I want to show you some incredible things in the Bible and what the Bible has to say about it. Now, criticism is best understood as a personal attack on the character of your partner. Let me say that again. Criticism is best understood as a personal attack on the character of your partner. Now, Gottman likes to differentiate between criticism and complaints. You see, it can be healthy to have complaints, but it's not healthy to have criticism in the relationship. I'll give you a couple of examples to try to show you the difference in what I'm talking about. In a complaint, you may say, I'm frustrated because you promised me you'd have the dishes done yesterday and they're still in the sink today. That's a complaint. Dishes weren't done. You said they were going to be done. Here's a criticism. I see the dishes are still sitting there. How come you don't keep your promises? Okay, you've attacked the character of the person. You're telling this person you are not someone who can be trusted. What you really wanted to do was to simply complain about the dishes not being done. But because of you attacking the person's character by saying, how come you don't keep your promises, you are starting an erosion process in your marriage. Here's another one. This is a complaint. There's no gas in the car. Why didn't you fill it up like you said you would? You needed gas in that car. So you need to let this person know this was an inconvenience to you. So you said, there was no gas in the car. Why didn't you fill it up like you said you would? You haven't attacked the person. You just made known there was no gas. Criticism. Why can't you ever remember anything? I told you 1,000 times to fill up the gas tank and you didn't. Now you have made this a personal attack again upon the person. The person is becoming feeble-minded or whatever. They cannot remember anything when we know that's not true, because if they didn't remember anything, they wouldn't even know who you were that was sitting there talking to them. Now, complaints and criticism are closely connected, yet they are different. Gottman says the easiest way to turn a complaint into criticism is to add his favorite line, "What's the matter with you?" Okay, you know there's criticism when someone can read in what you're saying, "What's the matter with you?" Contempt. Let's look at this. Contempt conveys disgust. Things that convey disgust are things such as certain kinds of sarcasm and cynicism, name calling, eye rolling, sneering, mockery, and hostile humor. Gottman says contempt is actually the worst of the four horsemen. Here's an example. You tease me about always being out washing my truck, yet you always pay somebody to wash your car. Look how much money that is costing us. That is outrageous and is probably the most spoiled thing that you do. You can almost hear the subtext here in this thing. This person is saying, you make me sick. We don't want to convey that to our partner in the things that we are saying, where you are saying, ugh, I just can't stand you. You make me sick. And yet there are so many couples that will say that to each other, not realizing again, they are destroying the basis for their marriage. Contempt is the worst of the four horsemen. The third one is defensiveness. Defensiveness is a way of deflecting the things your partner says and essentially throwing the blame back onto your partner. Defensiveness comes out often after we realize we have been unfairly attacked or criticized by our partner. It may sound like this. The woman may say, how come you never shovel the driveway? The man responds, because you always leave your car parked there. Defensive. You might consider trying the garage. You never know what you might get out of me. Sarcasm, a form of contempt in that last statement. Okay, so we need to ask ourselves, why are we becoming so defensive? And why does what I say put my spouse on the defensive? Because we need to look at it from both ways, the person that is giving it and the person who is saying something that may be triggering it. The fourth apocalypse is finally is stonewalling. Stonewalling is refusing to say anything or even to acknowledge your partner is talking. Stonewalling is saying, we've got a problem, but I don't want to talk about it. It may take the form of hiding behind the newspaper, retreating into another room, looking down, not maintaining eye contact with the other person. Stonewalling usually enters a relationship when the levels of criticism, contempt, and defensiveness have become so high that the person thinks stonewalling will yield a better outcome, or at least a less terrible one. Now, women frequently complain that their partner is stonewalling, usually unaware that criticism, contempt, and defensiveness are usually what causes stonewalling to pop up. You know, a lot of times we're critical of our other partner without really meaning to be as critical as we actually are. It would be good if we could tell a friend or someone close to us, listen to the way that I talk to my wife and tell me what you hear. Tell me if you hear me being critical. Tell me if you hear me showing contempt. Tell me if you see me just being defensive about some of the small things. Trust somebody else to see if they can tell you that from how they watch you as you relate to your spouse. Now, have you ever heard of what's called nophetic counseling? You say, what are you talking about? It's spelled N-O-U-T-H-E-T-I-C. Nophetic counseling is a type of counseling that begins with the belief that the Bible is the only counseling manual that we should use, that found in the pages of the Bible are the answers to every human relational and personal problem. Now, I don't hold to that philosophy. God has given us brains and wisdom so that we can learn from observing human behavior. And God may give us principles to follow, but God doesn't always spell everything out inch by inch. You see, the Bible brings up money, but it's not the only book that we should read when it comes to learning how do we handle money well. How do we invest it? Where should we invest it? The Bible doesn't really talk about stocks and bonds and portfolios that much. So we can read other books to help us with that. The Bible talks about sex, but it doesn't contain all the world's information on sex. The Bible doesn't have a whole lot to say about various birth control methods. Even though it tells us how sex is to be used, we can read other books about sex to increase our understanding as Christians. The Bible mentions nature and what goes on in nature, but we also recognize there is some value to reading National Geographic sometimes if we want a closer look. Now, what I do believe about the Bible is that with all of these issues, the Bible is going to give us some framework in which to understand how it is we are to relate to one another. You saw, see, in the issue of counseling, very often there are spiritual issues that need to be dealt with. Because in almost every counseling case, I can think of sin somewhere being involved in the situation. You see, selfishness is at the root of many of our emotional problems. Now, I've told you some stuff about John Gottman and what he has to say, and that's good stuff. But we need to look at it, and we're going to look at it some more. But let me tell you something else is that the Bible has some good stuff to help out John Gottman's position. You see, without the book of James, we can't fully understand what John Gottman is talking about. James, the book of James, one of the books in the Bible, James chapter 4, verses 1, 2, James says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? Now, we would immediately say, this other person did this to me, this person did that. No, James says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You want something, but don't get it. You kill and covet, but you cannot have what you want. You quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. Now, John Gottman tells us that when we fight, we need to be careful about criticism, about contempt, about defensiveness, and about stonewalling, the four horsemen of the apocalypse. We need to understand those things. Now, as a pastor, I don't want to simply have a couple sitting in my office and I say to them, you know, your problem is sin. That's what your problem is. Let's just pray about it, and that's going to make it all better. Well, that's not the way it's going to work most of the time. I think John Gottman is an incredible resource for counselors, and it would be kind of foolhardy if we ignored him. But James asks another question we need to look at. What causes fights and quarrels among you? And James turned the spotlight right where I want to turn it today. Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? In other words, don't you fight because of all these unmet needs you have inside of you? Do you feel those things just tearing you apart? Guys, do you ever feel like you're going to explode if she just doesn't give you some credit for doing something right once in a while? Ladies, don't you sometimes feel if he doesn't take a chance and connect with you that you're just going to shrivel up and die inside? What causes fights and quarrels? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You know, so often in marriage, we'd be in catch-22 situations and we don't even recognize it. What am I talking about? Well, the wife starts feeling as though the husband is not making any connection with her emotionally. The husband feels this alienation and he gets upset because the sex and the experience, sexual experience, isn't there like it was, used to be. So he starts to withdraw from her. And when he withdraws from her, this feeds her need for intimacy, and she recognizes she's not getting it, and so she starts to step back further. She is thinking, well, if he's treating me like this, surely he's not interested in me for sex. But he is exactly interested in you for sex. But now he's become angry that you've taken another step back, so his behavior becomes even more distant. And we keep having this thing just keep stretching back and back and back and back until something happens and the marriage just becomes a terrible place for the two of them to exist. Now, what we've got to do is learn, how do we break those barriers back down? And how do we get beyond, you're not meeting my need, and because you're not meeting my needs, I'm not going to meet your needs. That's not what God has called us to do. James says, why do you fight and quarrel? Isn't it because it's because you didn't get what you wanted, and so you started acting a particular way? He goes on to talk about the lengths we go to get these needs met. You kill and you covet, but you cannot have what you want. You say, I would never kill the other person. No, you just are content killing their spirit, killing their joy, killing the fun that the both of you could have together. You criticize each other. You demonstrate contempt for each other. You respond defensively toward one another. You stonewall each other, and you shut one another out. Now, how can I be so confident in knowing this? Because as having been married for 26 years, I can see how I've made all of these same errors. And I'd like to say that I haven't made them anytime recently, but to do so would be lying. I have the same struggle in trying to keep a good 26-year marriage going, it'll be 27 this year, as you who've been married for 27 days, trying to make it to that 29th, 30th day. What's cool about where James, what James says, is that James gives us a solution. James says, you do not have, because you do not ask God. The solution then is becoming a God-centered spouse. Let me say that again. The solution is becoming a God-centered spouse. As long as you demand that your partner meet all your needs, you are going to be at war within yourself and with your spouse. As long as you live in some dream world where Mr. Prince Charming or Miss Perfect 10 will meet every need, satisfy every desire, you will be driven to quarrels and wars by your deep unmet needs. God never said another person could meet all of our needs. If another person could, there would be no reason to have God in our lives. What we must do is center ourselves on God. Ask God for what you need. Look to God as the source of true peace, true contentment, and true joy. And you will suddenly find yourself gaining what you were lacking. And you say, wait a minute, I married this other person in order to be happy. Well, you should have married that other person in order to make that other person happy, because you were agreeing to become a servant to this other person. And I'm talking about us as men being servants to our wives. We need to be more concerned about their happiness than our own. You'll discover not that all your needs are met, but that something far greater happens, and that's freedom from the press of constant need. Okay? What we need is not to have all our needs met, but to be free from the press of having constant needs. Freedom from having expectations of others that can never be fulfilled. Freedom from the self-centeredness that causes us to turn inward on ourselves and become depressed, resentful, and angry. Freedom from the need to have the constant approval of others. Folks, I believe freedom is not in having all of our needs met. Freedom is being free from the press of constant needs. The Apostle Paul, he wrote this in the book of the Bible that's known as Philippians. He said, Philippians 4, 11 through 13, I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in want or in plenty. I can do everything through Him who gives me strength. You see, American culture is always telling us about how we can have our needs met. But God wants to come into our lives and show us a way of living where we need less. What does any of this have to do with John Gottman? Actually, a great deal. Do you have any appreciation for how difficult it is if you're a critical person to see that in yourself and to do something about it? Do you realize how hard it is if you're naturally a contemptuous person to acknowledge the seriousness of that? Do you understand how hard it is if you are a stonewaller or a defensive person to drop those methods and open up to try something else? It takes work. It takes effort. It takes a heart change. It takes patience and practice and desire and dedication and a willingness to face hard truths about yourself. In verse 11, Paul says, I have learned to be content. In verse 12, he says, I have learned the secret of being content. And what is that secret? I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. It's a secret. See, contentment is a secret. It's not obvious. Notice, Paul had to learn this secret. He had to go through the process of hearing the secret, believing the secret, and then constantly applying it into his life until he had learned it. It was a process. It takes time, it takes effort, it takes determination. Learning equals hearing plus believing plus applying. This means we cannot walk out of here today completely finished with contempt, criticism, defensiveness, or stonewalling. You can't just go forward in church and say, I've got a problem with content, lay hands on me so that I'll be a new person when I go out of here. You can't just say that about stonewalling or criticism or about anything else. What you need to say is, lay hands on me. Here is something I've been wrestling in my life with, and I want you to pray that I will learn how to deal with this in a different manner. And that's when the Holy Spirit will come into your life and show you there is a different way for you to handle this situation in your marriage. God will help us in whatever aspect we need some help. We have a lot to learn. You see, heart changes take time. And when Jesus talked earlier about what's in the heart is going to come out, Jesus is in the business of changing people's hearts. Marriages fail because of problems within the heart. If we would allow Jesus to change our heart, we would have a much better chance of success in finding the joy and happiness in marriage that God intended for us to find. You see, I'm looking at two heart changes today. One of them begins when we say, I don't want to be critical anymore. I want to learn to communicate without contempt or defensiveness. I want to open up and stop stonewalling. That's one of the heart changes. Then the other one begins when we say, God, why do I do these things in the first place? What's up with all these unmet needs within me that just rage all the time and cause me to quarrel and fight with those I love? God, will you help me learn the secret of being content to need less? You see, both of those questions require heart change, and I want to urge you to ask God to help you make both changes. We're really dealing with the deepest levels of reality here. On the surface, the conventional wisdom tells us it's arguments over sex and money and in-laws and child rearing that split up a couple. Or you better learn how to communicate. John Gottman comes along and says, no, it's not. Those arguments aren't directly related to divorce at all. What splits up a couple is the basic way they treat one another. Let me say that again. What splits up a couple is the basic way that they treat one another. How are you treating your wife, men? How am I treating mine? That's what's going to determine whether or not we make it or not. It's a heart thing. James comes along and says, yeah, but what causes these fights in the first place? Isn't it because you don't go to God with your needs? Then the Apostle Paul comes along and says, yeah, and when you go to God with your unmet needs, God will teach you the secret of contentment. God will free you from having so much need. Conventional wisdom says, conflict causes divorce. Gottman says mistreatment causes divorce. James says unmet needs cause mistreatment and conflict. Paul says, let God teach you to need less. The less we need, the less pressure we're going to be putting upon our spouse to try to get them to conform to what it is we want them to look like. So we go to God with our needs. We ask God to help us see ourselves for who we really are. Ask God to show us our criticism, our contempt, our defensiveness, our stonewalling, all of that stuff that we employ as a way of getting our partner to do or to be who we want them to be. We don't just work on being less critical, less contemptuous. We must understand that we need to be doing these things in order that God may perfect His desires, His will, His holiness inside of us. We need to see criticism, contentment, defensiveness, and stonewalling as things we do because we are what? We are sinners. Every one of us. We need to go beyond John Gottman and see the spiritual realities behind the things that he has identified. God, replace criticism with graciousness in my heart. You know, the more thankful you are for your wife, the less you will criticize her. Replace contentment or contempt with boundless love and kindness. Replace defensiveness and stonewalling with authentic openness in my heart. I'm going to ask you to pray with me in a moment. But before I do, I want to give you the tips on what you can do before you turn this broadcast off. First, begin by praying regularly. God, please begin to replace these things in my heart. Help me learn to be content. And help me to see my marriage as a good place to practice. Second, after you've had an argument and you've had a chance to cool off, begin thinking back through what you said and how you said it. Identify your words or your body language that communicated one of these four destructive things and really take responsibility.